Jesus Christ is risen. It's the good news all the world needs to hear, and you can help deliver the message. The Lutheran Heritage Foundation is dedicated to translating and printing the good books of our Lutheran faith so that all nations may know the love of Christ. In more than 140 languages, LHF provides Bible storybooks, small catechisms, devotion books, and more that proclaim the Easter message. Learn how you can help at lhfmissions.org.
Listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Today is exciting because we are debuting another series because once again, there's more people to talk to that don't fall into our normal categories. So today is our first episode in our Leading Ladies series on the podcast, which is super exciting. Rachel, how did this come about? Why are we even doing this?
Well, so as you know, we have several interview series that we pull from. We started with our one question interview, which are
the question,
our interviews with subject matter experts on a hot topic we want to talk about. We have our conversations with creatives episodes where we talk with authors and artists and microformers, you know, all sorts of interesting people.
That was
people.
Super fun.
I enjoyed that one. We have our mother-daughter series where we talk with a mother and a daughter at the same time. It might even be one. Oh, yeah. Kitchen Table Talks. We let the guys the ordained guys in the lounge to help us answer theological tough questions. But there was a glaring hole in our interview series where we really wanted to focus on women who are in some sort of position of leadership or influence. Now, there's this sort of myth that we don't have women leaders in the LCMS because our church doesn't ordain women, and we are all on board with that theological stance. But that doesn't mean we don't have leading ladies. And so this series is intended to welcome on some of those women and allow them to share their stories and share their wisdom with us on what it means to be a leader in the church in various ways. So I will throw back to you, Sarah, to introduce our guests for this inaugural Leading Ladies interview series. Who do we have?
Yes, today we have a fellow Lutheran lady joining us, Teresa Todd. She is the wife of Chaplain Gregory Todd, who is the chief of chaplains for the U.S. Navy. So, you know, just a small little gig going on. No big deal. Thanks so much for joining us, Teresa. This is so fun.
I am so happy to be here. This is fabulous. And I'm so glad to be the inaugural person.
Yes. Couldn't have happened to a nicer person. Yeah, we are super excited to talk to you today and just to learn about your story and what it's like to be the wife of the chief of chaplains for the U.S. Navy. That's got to must have some stories along with it that we'll get to. But first, what is your story? Who is Teresa Todd?
Yes, I am a Lutheran lady. I grew up Lutheran. In Oklahoma, I was born in 1958.
Excellent. Good year.
The church was a big part of my life, you know, Sunday school, vacation Bible school. I took piano. I learned how to play organ. Then I was an organist and drove to country churches and played and just loved doing that. Youth group. Yeah. Summer camp. I was an LWML rep. For LWML and
nice.
that was cool. There's so many places to start. I grew up and went to college and graduated and then met Greg at Lutheroma, the summer camp. Maybe some listeners have heard of Lutheroma. Yeah. They had a Labor Day weekend camp and he was there as a youth staffer for Board for Youth Staffers out of Synod. He was attending Concordia College in Portland and took a year off. And so I met him that weekend and I volunteered to help with the worship service. Interesting because he left that weekend, Monday, he drove away. I was like, all right, that's that. That's where my future is. No, I'm like, that's not, you know, I was like, wow, that's where my future is. Uh-huh. It was kind of weird. It was kind of solid. And uh-huh. I mean, I don't know if she thought that or not, but. So then I took more organ, went to college. I found out that I, you know, needed to work better on my pedals and buy better shoes. Everybody knows that. It's a place of organ.
Yeah.
And we started dating, got married. I mean, yeah. And
oh, wait a second, though.
No.
How isn't he gone back to Portland, Oregon?
He's in Portland.
Oklahoma?
Wait. I'm sorry, I missed a step. Yeah. We got married and went to Concordia in Portland. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. I didn't go there. Yeah. And on the way, we went to Disneyland for our honeymoon.
Okay.
And yeah, that was good. And so then when we were married and he decided to not be a DCE anymore, that's what he was going to be when I met him. And then after doing the youth staffing program in Oklahoma, he decided he needed to be a pastor.
Okay.
So then he got back to Concordia and had to do all the Greek and Hebrew.
Fun.
So that was a little overwhelming. And just married. And then after we were married a year and a half, I got pregnant. And so then we went to seminary and at St. Louis. And our first child was the day before STEM started for him.
Okay. So,
a little crazy.
Yeah.
And somehow we got through that. We kept looking around for the adult supervision and say, are they really letting us do this? Seminary with a baby. And then second year, he signed up to do the chaplain training. He was going to be in the reserves, which it was really good. It was very helpful for us in, well, financially, but because he had always wondered if this was a venue he wanted to go down. And it was wonderful when we got to our first congregation in Southern Illinois. And they were just so supportive of him being a reservist, which means a lot when you've invested your time and, you know, to be a chaplain, that the congregation was so supportive of us. They were wonderful.
Can I ask a quick question just timeline? When is this that he is thinking he's going to do chaplaincy in the reservist?
It was the end of the second year. Was it the end of the second year? No. It was the end of the first year at seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And there were recruiters on campus. They came to, I think, a coffee hour, maybe. I can't remember exactly. And he came home and said, hey, I think I might want to try this out.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, no, sorry. I'm thinking like time, like year. What year is this?
Oh, right. We got married in 1982.
Okay.
So it's been a little while.
Okay. Things have calmed down somewhat after Vietnam.
Right. Yeah.
That was like a whole time in America. That's a cool thing. So I was just curious, like, where this fits in that
into
part
our
of
military
the timeline.
History.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 80s were a great time to join the military.
Okay.
He grew up seeing ships in Seattle. So he knew a little bit about ships. And his dad was in for a little while. So it was something that he had considered doing. And when God put it in front of him like that at the seminary, and it was easy to do, to take that time off in the summer to go to the training. And at that time, it was in Rhode Island, like it is now. So he went forward with it, and it was an easy thing to do in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Then the call, you know, to Southern Illinois. We were there for 6 years in two different parishes and had 5 daughters. So,
okay.
Yeah. We had, to our second church, we had the 3 daughters, and then I got pregnant with twins. So that was
okay.
Yeah. It was wonderful, but That congregation in Southern Illinois, in Jacob, Illinois, it's just fabulous.
Oh.
Two of you, you know the new pastor there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Lovely.
Well, if you're going to have twins, you better do it in a supportive congregation because need a tribe.
Oh, yeah. Please. They were so helpful. I mean, they would come by and say, I'm here to pick up your laundry. Like, okay, here, take it. And then when they brought it back, bring back a pie or a casserole along with it all neatly folded, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's the best.
And I would sit by my church on Sundays sometimes because they would all say, oh, we can take her.
Oh, that's beautiful.
What a blessing. Yeah,
it's wonderful. It really is. So we couldn't have done it, you know, any of that early time on without that congregation. Very helpful. And we were there for 4 years. And Greg was drilling and Kate Girardo and sometimes I think Paducah. And the tailor was like, you're not getting any younger. You want to go active duty. And that was something that was looming ahead of us for you know, a couple years during that time that we were in Southern Illinois. And so, yeah, he was like, well, I'm going to put in my paperwork, but they'll never take me because, you know, I might be too old or it's hard to do. They don't like to take reservists. And it was immediately. So then we had to make a decision.
As God's timing generally works.
Okay. This will never happen.
Right.
It does.
Right?
Yes.
So, and beyond that, how do we decide? Because we had the girls in the Lutheran school. We were in the middle of the United States, close to my family in Oklahoma. We weren't sure about going to either coast and being on a ship and leaving me with the five girls, and he was at sea. So there were many, many questions. And of course, we just prayed about it to try to figure out the best answer for us as a family and to say goodbye to a beautiful congregation.
Yeah.
Many hard things. Everything was a yes. It was like a double. There were no no's. We couldn't say no, you know. It was so many things. The church, there, you know, there was a Lutheran school right by the base there. And the first call was first duty station. Call. Okay, Rachel.
I do it too. Don't worry.
Duty station. Yeah. Well, there's another part of that, right? And there's another story of that. But so was Coronado in San Diego. And I had no idea what Coronado was about. So I was just kind of like, okay. And you find out, you ask anybody in the Navy and they're like, you know, lift up their jaw because they just, like, how did you get that billet? It was awesome. So we had to decide, you know, that there was a weekend school right close by. They charged, I can't remember, maybe very little or free for the kids to go to school. And he was in a chapel, so he wouldn't be on a ship and leave us in the middle. He was always afraid to, he told me later, he was afraid of just, you know, you get afraid of the world out there.
Yeah.
And in big cities, it's maybe more scary. But I think that was why he was not making the decision earlier. We'd have to be in a big city. And then in Southern Illinois, the flood of 93 happened that year. And so we're like, hey, God's got us wherever we are. It's kind of, there's scariness anywhere we go.
Yeah.
And so it was just one of those things. We couldn't say no to everything God had put in front of us. Yeah.
So active duty in Coronado.
Yeah.
Coronado. That obviously didn't last forever. What came next?
Well, he's Sergeant Coronado, and then he transferred over to a ship, so we didn't have to move. We were there for 4 years in Southern California, which was just glorious. I love living in Southern California. 1994 to 98, you know.
Yes.
That was a good time to be in mm-hmm. Southern California. And then the detailer said, okay, where was it? There weren't many options. It was like New York City. Okay.
All right.
New York City. Okay, here's a point. The Navy chaplains serve the Coast Guard mm-hmm. and the Marines as well. Yes. So Greg would be the chaplain of Activities New York, Natsco Sector New York. And so that was a scary idea, but we drove across the United States and lived on base on Staten Island and overlooked the lower harbor of New York and could see Coney Island across there and New Jersey to the south. It was just beautiful. We loved living there. Yeah, beautiful. Well, we got there in 98 and then we were there for 4 years. So that did cover September 11th, 2001.
Yeah.
And that was a hard time. We loved New York. Everybody asked me, what was your favorite duty station? And I will tell them all four of them. And that's another part to the story. And it was the best and the worst, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because we were able to go into Manhattan. Greg would, you know, say a prayer for this and that. We were always dressing up. We got to go to Broadway shows. Mm. The girls lived on a base and it was great. They were in a Lutheran school on Staten Island.
Wow.
That it was just a good duty station.
Mm.
But the 9/11 did happen and it was difficult.
Yeah.
We were there for 4 years. When that morning, I'll just tell you a bit about it.
Yeah,
that morning, I was going to go across to Brooklyn and shop at a commissary over there. And my friend called and said, turn on the TV. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's instant. And I said, we couldn't go anywhere. We couldn't leave the island. And I was like, oh my goodness, Greg, flying out of Newark to Boston that day.
Mm.
And my first thought was, well, what if it was a small plane? You know, I had no idea if it was a small plane or not. So that was scary. And after a bit, we saw how tragic it was. And then all of us on the base got together and watched. And it took him forever to get home because he was in the air when he was flying. So,
oh, goodness.
And thankfully, someone was able to drive him home and they let him across to get back. But there was a lot of fellow chaplains that came in to work that time to be at the morgue and to be at the ground zero. So, it was a part. It's hard to talk about. I know Greg doesn't talk about it much. You don't relive a lot of it, but it's there, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a memory, part of our story.
Yeah.
And it's events like that that are why we do what we do, why they do what they do is to be there with the word of God and his
Absolutely.
Grace in the darkest moments, even if you don't want to remember them afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. I don't remember what time it was it must have been when we were, I don't remember what year that movie came out. He was telling me the other day about watching when we went to see you. And it was one of the transitions from one job to another, just questioning about call. If, you know, how can you compare a call to a parish and a call to chaplaincy?
Right.
And of course,
we ask that all the time.
Yeah.
But it is.
Yeah.
It is a call.
Absolutely. Absolutely the call. And that's what you think of initially when you think about going into the chaplaincy like that. It's still a call and, you know, but then after you work at it for so long and you miss church or you go to a district convention and to see what's really happening in the church, or you go to your own church. We've always been, you know, in a church, wherever we've gone, a Lutheran church, even if he was in a chapel. And we would figure out what it meant to be called to that place. Mm-hmm. And the one time we went to see a movie, it was Crimson Tide. And this was a struggle, you know, a little back and forth. And there was a part where the submarine is going to not come back up and the men are going to die. And you just kind of know that and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he got a little weepy. And I leaned over to him and I said, "This is why you do what you do," you know. Mm-hmm. And I look back on it and he'll say, "Well, that meant a lot to me." And I'm like, and you know, you as a wife, you reach out and there's times when you feel like there's something you need to say mm-hmm. to be encouraging or positive. And so I mentioned that to him, "This is why you do what you do." And I kept thinking, he's like, "Yeah, because I care for these people and love them, and they need to see that they're loved before they go to a situation like this where they're facing their death."
Mm-hmm.
So that's the calling right there. God has it in that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny when you remember things or don't remember things, someone reminds you of something and you're like, "Oh yeah, I said that."
I don't know.
Yes.
Right.
Well, if you remember it, I probably said it.
That's right. Right. And that it's different. It's a calling, like Aaron, you working with missionaries, mm-hmm. right? I mean, and so as missionaries, we are in a field that mm-hmm. is unique and a thought different from a regular congregation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, so, LCMS has had, I think it's always been, but or if not always, then for a very long time, the chaplains have always been put in the mission department.
Yeah.
So like mm-hmm. the Ministry of the Armed Forces is part of the Office of International Mission.
Yeah.
Because chaplains are sent in a very different way than mm-hmm. the parish pastor is.
Yeah. Before Ken received his commission as a chaplain, he received his call documents
from the Board
Office of International Mission. And yep. it meant more to him than the officer's commission
mm-hmm.
was this feeling of being, well, mm-hmm. not just a feeling, the reality
of
being called as a pastor.
Yeah.
And being, he was installed before he was commissioned.
Uh-oh. Teresa, this last weekend, I heard Chaplain Craig Mueller. I was at an LWML convention, and I heard him give a presentation about Ministry of the Armed Forces and the chaplains. And one of the things that he talked about was how chaplains in particular really are standing very clearly in sort of the two kingdoms. And I wondered if, I don't know, is... I didn't tell you this question in advance, so we'll see if it's fine. But like, do you feel that at all in your role as chaplain's wife? Do you feel like you engage more with the two kingdoms, I guess, or engage mm-hmm. with them in a different way than you did as a parish pastor's wife? I don't know if that
undoubtedly.
Makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Undoubtedly. Okay. Right. Because when I'm with the Lutheran wives, you know, at the conference and everything, it's a different level of connectivity when I see Rachel. And it's a good thing, but it just reminds me that God gives me that connectivity. And all of the chaplains have that within their own faith tradition. They all are allowed that time to be with their own faith tradition and have that connection. So that is a blessing for sure. But then it also reminds us, like when we leave, it's like, okay, we do have this other, you can't say, they say general Protestant, you know, and mm-hmm. it's not generic. It's just that you reach out and you are there for all faith tradition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that is very much different as far as our faith traditions. The two kingdoms, in talking about, you know, my life day to day, I don't I don't see it a lot. You know, I have neighbors, just neighbors that I live by and everything. It just really, if I'm addressing a group of people and remember how to say things or not to say things, you know. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't got called out on anything, I don't think, but, or to say something or not, but it just is a reminder that there are other opinions out there. And, but as a Lutheran, growing up as a Lutheran and a Christian, I just know that God loves everybody, and where they are in their life is between them and God. So that's how I try to deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And live it. Live it.
Yeah. When you're in the parish, and Teresa, maybe you had this experience too, it's real easy to get into a church bubble. The Lutheran bubble, we call it. I definitely experienced it when I was working in the building where Sarah and Aaron are sitting right now.
Oh, yes.
Right. Getting involved in the military chaplaincy, the bubble just pops. There's no bubble.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Right. That's so true. That is so true, Rachel. Yeah, because you're really one of the, you know, the only thing you have to deal with and try to make it not judgmental or anything. I mean, because we have ranks, and so you have ranks and you have enlisted members and you have, and so a lot of the groups that I've been involved in, it kind of fades away, but it's still there. It's not like it used to be when we were first in 86, it was much more divided. It's become less so in recent years, and very across the board. Yeah, it's fine. I don't know if you found that, Rachel.
I think, yes, there is definitely more awareness of ranks in the military than outside of the military. But I'm thankful that it's not as rigid as I hear people, you know, tell me about from the past, you know, folks who have been in for a long time. And I think that's a good thing, in that we can all regard each other as just fellow people a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's good. It's good, especially when you're in a chapel setting or in a spouse's group setting, that is about person to person and not wearing your husband's rank on your shoulder.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't have a uniform. There's no insignia on my cardigan. So it just, I think, frees me up. And maybe this is something that chaplain wives are more free to do, because we don't have a rank, that we can just be that bridge person, because we don't have to say much about ourselves if we don't want to. And fly under the radar a bit more.
Right. You're probably a little bit closer to being just a past wife than I am. So
yes.
I know if you remember that time, then yeah.
There's not much flying on the radar for you. I know. I'll just acknowledge that right out.
Yeah. That's fair. Well, and that makes me curious, what kinds of leadership opportunities have you had over the years now that you're in this space of not being able to fly under the radar so much anymore? What kinds of opportunities have you had to be in a leadership role or giving guidance or mentorship to other women or other people in general?
Yeah, that was a good question. I don't feel myself in many leadership roles. I know that in different settings, I have spoke with people or I have answered questions, and maybe it's one-on-one. So I've really been, if anyone's a leader, then someone's a follower. I'm a follower, or I'm a supporter, you know. I feel like I'm hard to support something. I like this one word Greg used, part of his doctorate. I can't remember the title of it. He researched leadership, and the favorite word that I learned out of that when he was talking things back and forth to me was paraclete. And it's such a great word. I love that word. And so when you look it up, and it means so many things, and officially, you know, Holy Spirit and then Comforter, advocate, helper, intercessor, someone called to be an aid to somebody. But I love that image of just being alongside somebody and being support to them. So I don't always see myself as a leader, convincing people to follow me or change or work in that regard, but just that I can be along beside you, be of support. And
well, yeah. I can testify that this brand of leadership is very effective. You all came up for the Navy chaplain birthday celebration to New England earlier this year, and I saw you there. Not only did you remember who I was, but you had some wonderful words of just encouragement for me at the time, you know, shared with me part of your story, and I needed to hear it. You probably didn't know that I needed to hear it at that time, but just that kind conversation made a real difference in my outlook on life for a while afterwards. So I love that you say you don't have to be a leader to lead. I'm paraphrasing here. Yeah. That being that paraclete is just as important and influential and makes a huge difference in people's lives.
Mm-hmm. I pray that God could use me in maybe whatever situation. Of course, he puts me in support my husband. And I feel we were talking about called to support his call. Mm-hmm. So he reminds me that I said, what if I'm called to support you, you know, that's my calling.
That's my beautiful calling. So how do you do that from as one chaplain wife to another? And I'm not very good at it most days. Let's be honest, play to our strengths. I'm
you
could do better.
You are a mom. You have beautiful children.
Yes.
For your husband. You have a wonderful home life. If he's away, you provide him the stability to know that it's all good because you're there. And that's huge. That is huge. That's a topic among military spouses. Occasionally, I don't wear my rank and I don't have a job. I don't need to do anything. But there's still some expectations to be involved to some degree. But it's so whatever you do, and you have gifts. It's different for us as chaplain spouses because we have that part, that continuity, that solid rock within us, that when we have something go wrong in the military and it's hard and it's something that'll shake us, you know, there's been a suicide, the way something bad happens. Or your family, you're away from your family and something bad happens to your family. But as Christians, we have that, you know, it's bad things happen, but we have that kind of like a rubber band. It brings us back, you know, it just brings us back because that resilience is our faith and God places that in us so that we do have it. So that's been huge for me to know just for all of my life that I have that piece there.
Do you ever find yourself in a position where, because I do, where you find yourself needing to encourage your husband in his faith or in his faith and his work and the intersection thereof? How do you do that?
Well, like that one thing I said, you know, with the reminding him his call. And it's a hard time because you have found probably it's hard, Rachel, when you move from place to place. And because the military moves you around so much, it's like you're starting over again. Yeah. It's a different kind of job, a different position. You're working with so many different people. And I think that's been one of the harder things to deal with is, of course, the change for your family. You got to find a new dentist. You got to find a new everything. And the moving is hard. So remind me again where you wanted me to.
How do you support your husband in his faith?
Right.
When things get hard. And acknowledging, as I asked this question, that oftentimes the worst days he can't tell me about.
Yeah.
The encounters That's that true. Really shake him because of his, you know, confessional seal, he right. can't talk about. I just have to figure it out. And I know that's got to be your experience as well. So how do you navigate that?
Right. And why do we want to help? We are there helping. We do that, what we do every day. We do the laundry, we cook the meals, and then we help them to stay focused on where they need to be. Mm-hmm. That's a hard question, because do we do that just by being the routine and providing the routine? And to answer the specifics, it's kind of hard to say what would work best besides, well, let's sit down and read the Bible together, or let's pray together. Yeah. And then trust that God would move you beyond it at that time, and trust that his call is still there and playing on his heart. There have been times, sure, that I think we all do that in any field that we're in any job that we're in. So we just try to make it as normal as we can.
Yeah. No, that's a good reminder that normal is sane and good. Mm. And after you've been completely drugged through the spiritual mud during your workday, to be able to come home and see normal is a great gift.
Yeah.
It really is. It is. And so we don't know, because we want to know how their day went. And if we see them stressed, we want to make them not be stressed, and we want to make them happy. Yeah. It's hard. I know. I think we missed like the rest of our life, because we went to New York. We went to North Carolina for 12 years.
Well, I wanted to hear the rest of it. Let's circle back and finish this story now that we've had some other chit chat.
Yeah, we took a break. Now we're gonna pick it up again.
Yeah.
So we were in North Carolina for 12 years, which is kind of unheard of. I'm embarrassed to tell that to people, you know, when they ask, where all have you been? Have you moved like every 2 years? No.
It's actually reassuring to me to know that can happen, because that sounds pretty good to me.
I don't know. To me, that sounds like getting upgraded to first class. Yeah. I always like the sound of it, but then I'm like, it's going to ruin me forever if it ever happens to me.
Yeah. But it was great. It was, the timing was great. The girls got through high school and college all in one place. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
And that was such a blessing. But when you try to, you said something about, you know, couples that might be considering the chaplaincy.
Yeah,
you can't just say that, because it doesn't always happen like that. No. It's kind of very unique.
Mm. I met a fellow Navy spouse recently at our church, actually. And I said, oh, it's great to meet you. I'm glad you're here. Are you connected in the community? And, you know, how's things going? And she goes, yeah, well, we just got here and we're PCSing in July.
Oh my.
Very soon.
Whoa. Yeah, that can also happen, apparently. And it's an Aconit. They're going overseas after.
Oh.
Just a few months in Connecticut. So, you know, pray for your military family.
Yeah. That's a lot of
Yes, it is. Wow. That's a hard one. I know. I've never lived overseas. So that's, that'll be wonderful for them. I've heard so many good things about living outside of the United States.
So you were in North Carolina for all those years, but that wasn't all years. Just one billet, was it? You had various adventures.
It was five. Yeah,
five to one.
Okay. Yeah. So, he was with the second FSG. FSSG when we got there. And so now it's not that anymore. It's MLG. So it's all different. I think.
Names of ships.
No, it was working for the Marine Corps at that time down in Jacksonville. Okay. It was with the Marine Corps. And so that was at Camp Lejeune. And then he worked on Camp Johnson with CREST, which trained the RPs, the religious program specialists, that support chaplain. They're not necessarily like Christian or faith or end up from a church or anything. They've just been assigned this position within the Navy. Huh. Some of them want it, and some of them, that was all that they could get. So it's really great because you see these RPs that their lives are impacted then by being involved with chaplains. So it's really, really cool.
We love our RPs. They're somewhere in between an administrative assistant and a bodyguard. And it's a really cool thing to do. Because chaplains aren't allowed to carry weapons of any kind. So it's good to have some people around them who can take care of that if they ever happen to need us.
Interesting.
Right. The behind the scenes that the rest of us don't know.
Yeah. We do love our RPs for our chaplains. They're very big support.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, definitely. So he was at the school for training those RPs. And then went to the USS Kearsarge. It was in the dry docks in Portsmouth, Virginia, which was only about 4 hours away from where we were. So he would drive back and forth. We had girls in college. We didn't want them to lose their in-state tuition. And so I stayed in Jacksonville house and he drove back and forth. So that was the only time. I mean, sometimes you have to come to a decision. We had said we would never be divided. He would never be a geographical bachelor and live or be assigned away from me. And I don't know if you discussed that at all, Rachel. I mean, that's a hard thing. You can't discuss it till you get to that point, really.
Yeah. No, we've always said we'll never do it until now. We're looking at two kids in college, similar situation. And we're like, well, if it comes up, we might actually do it. I don't want to. I love him. I like spending time with him. But you got to make those decisions as they come.
Yeah,
that's true. You may surprise yourself.
Right. This one was one that we just, it was easy because he was just, he lived on the ship and then he drove home most weekends, every other weekend. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't too bad. And then he came back to Jacksonville. The detailer was like, okay, where do you want to go? Oh, we could go here and there or there. And they go, nope, that one closed. Nope, that one closed. That option's not anymore. Well, we have this place. You could do the Marines again in Camp Luzerne in North Carolina. And he's like, well, that works out. I have a wife and a house there. So
just a couple things.
So he did two more tours there in Jacksonville. So for the total of 12 years, it was a blessing, but I was ready to move on. If I'm going to be a Navy spouse, you get used to not sitting in one spot, or, you know, you look for the next thing, which
is going to be, Rachel, you get used to kind of start getting used forward to it.
And I guess it would be a weird thing. You know, that old recruiting slogan, join the Navy, see the world, is not the same as join the Navy, see Jacksonville, North Carolina.
For 20 years.
Right. But it was great to be there, and I really appreciated it. But I don't know what that's going to be like when we retire. I mean, we're going to be, okay, it's time to move again. You know,
RV
I don't know.
Life. Yes, RV.
That's what I'm thinking. RV. In fact, that's so crazy. Tomorrow, we're going to go looking at RVs. down at Camper World.
Camper World, that is the most perfect name for a dealer I've ever heard.
Love it. Oh, and then he came up here, you know, interviewed for the chief of chaplains for the Coast Guard. And then that's where we were next. And that was such a surprise that he got that. He was very honored because of the time that he had said that would be one of the jobs he would like to still do if it came up as a possibility, his time with the Coast Guard in New York and that during 9/11. So he was given the interview and he interviewed and he got it. And then we were here in DC, which he always says, we avoided it until the very career. Never been here before. So, and now we will end up being here 12 years because he had the chaplain of the Coast Guard and then the chaplain of the Marine Corps and now chaplain of the Navy.
Wow.
So kind of crazy. No one's ever done that before. So that's pretty weird.
Oh, no one's ever done all three?
No. No.
Really? I did not know that.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's,
I mean, I know that Chaplain Todd is very well respected and beloved by all those who look up to him. But this, that's very
Are there
cool.
any other chief of chaplain options out there that he could kill? Or is he has now done them all?
Bingo card?
Yeah, in 2 years, we are done. Done. Yeah.
Okay. No more. Okay.
There's been a couple chaplains. One is the chaplain of the Senate now, and one is the chaplain of the House. I don't think that's an option.
I feel like that's a different. That's a really different role than chief of chaplains.
Yeah,
chief
that
of
doesn't
senators.
Sound quite as fun, actually.
I know, it really doesn't.
No,
Or I mean, it is a very different set of challenges. I think that you would face.
Right. You had one question I wanted to talk about a little bit too.
Yes, please.
If I said anything to. A new chaplain spouse. I think I wish I would have done better journaling. You know, I wish I would have kept track of things better. And because my grandma did that, and I loved my grandma's little diaries. And it rained today. You know, I'm like, okay, well, I have a little bit more to write down, I think, than it rained today. So, you know. But I love reading hers, and I'm like, I want to look back and I like remembering history. I like this, my personal history, family history. Really.
Yeah.
So that's one suggestion I would have for a chaplain spouse. And join a spouse group. If it's other chaplain spouses, if it's Marine spouses, if it's Coast Guard, Navy, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Neighborhood groups. Just, I mean, you'll be, hopefully they'll have the opportunity to be in a Lutheran church. Some places were limited in Lutheran churches that they could attend, but it's important to be involved with other spouses that understand where you are. And I think that's true of all women in all places, that we like to connect with each other.
Yes.
Be close. Yeah. Just like the opportunity to do this, to share the Lutheran piece.
Yeah.
Which is awesome that you guys have created.
This is my group of people I connect with. I have others, but these sisters keep me strong on a daily basis. Yeah.
That's so wonderful. And when you don't have that and you're just lonely or afraid, then it is hard to be a chaplain spouse. But when you reach out and have that connection, even if it's, I don't like to depend on social media for a connection, but it's sometimes what we have to depend on. But it's outside
better,
of that.
It's better than nothing, but it's so not ideal. I know our first duty station, we picked up, moved cross country, knew nobody, and then the pandemic hit. And that was so miserable.
Yeah.
It's been night and day with the second one. We're able to get out. We have a wonderful church in town. We have homeschool groups. We have, you know, it has just, life is so much more beautiful and rich when you connect.
Yeah.
Sure. Even if it's not forever.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because it is limited at times in the military. You would be with them and then you wouldn't be with them. And then if they're military and Navy, you might be with them again wherever you move.
Right. Yeah. It's down the road. Never say goodbye forever.
I think that's important for us non-military spouse people to remember too, that just because a military family may be, I don't know if they would be in our church, but in our community or somewhere, even if they're only going to be there for a couple of years, it's worth it to make the effort to get to know them, to get to know their kids, even if you know it's going to be a short amount of time, because those connections are really, really important for them and for you too, to build that community. And then we have the blessing/curse of social media, that you can continue that even if you're not together after they move away. You're able to continue those connections, but to make the effort to get to know people.
Thank you for that, Sarah. That's so true, that it is very important to reach out and make the connections. That congregation in Illinois, we were just there for the 100% totality. It felt like we never left. Then that was how many years ago? 30 years ago. So, But it's so nice to have that. If you're in the military and you move around, you come back to where what you feel is home, or if you have this, that you feel that connection. I get the opportunity to go back to Oklahoma and see my family. I'm going to go next week. So that's really nice. And that solid connection is important to everybody in the military.
Yeah. Be connected where you are. Stay grounded where you came from. And hopefully not too many bad days.
I know. We have people considering, I think, the chaplaincy. And it's really hard to make that commitment or that decision. And like we lived it. We didn't have a clear yes. There were just no no's. I don't know. Maybe you've talked about your experience before, Rachel, as far as becoming active duty. I don't remember where it was.
It happened in an elevator at the Lutheran Church Extension Fund, where I happened to be playing a chapel service. And Chaplain Steve Hocano was preaching. And we were going down in the elevator and got to know each other. And he asked, "What's your husband doing right now? Can I take him to lunch?" And the rest is history. And it is kind of beautiful and uncanny the way everything sort of happened and came together.
It is. It's hard to say goodbye to family. I'm sure it was hard. I don't know where you were, your first church. Hard to say goodbye to your church, your parish, or if you're close to your family members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? We will move from 7 hours to 15 hours and have never lived closer than that. For me, even further from my husband's family. And it is. Yeah. That's the hardest thing, is watching everyone get older and being separated.
Mm-hmm.
But I love your example of stay connected and stay grounded.
Right.
Fly out to Oklahoma regularly, except it's Michigan for me. So
Michigan. Same.
we just got back from Washington State. We were visiting Greg's mom for her 85th birthday. So that was wonderful. And you do. So you make a commitment. It's very intentional to get to see your family and to go see them then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to actually work at it.
Right. But when I have one story on our daughter, Madeline, when she was younger and Greg was on a ship and he wanted to try to call her for her birthday. And so this was in 1995. I can't remember how old she was, but she wanted to make sure she was very scared to talk because she didn't want to say anywhere in her sentence the word over, because she was on a line that she had to say over. And when that was the only way we could talk to each other. We had a phone call. So she was kind of afraid that she would say in her sentence to Dad. And that was really cute. So communication has come a long way. We didn't have email. We, and didn't have phone calls. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Marsat line, that was it.
Yeah, the phone calls are not, even today, aren't anything you can rely on. I know the very few phone calls I got when Ken was deployed usually involved every other sentence him saying, "Hang on, someone's landing a jet on my head." And we'd have to pause for a couple of seconds.
That ship design. I know the chaplain always ends up under the landing pad.
Yes.
That's funny.
Hey, have either of you ever gotten to go onto an aircraft carrier? Like, have you been able to go and see things?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very cool.
Okay,
ever get the chance. In San Diego, they had an Easter sunrise service on the deck of the Constellation, USS Constellation. And that was really cool.
That'd be really cool.
And I think,
cool.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Navy ship to just be on? I know it's a weird question. This was not on the prepared list, but now I'm totally curious because I've been on an aircraft carrier, but I haven't been on most of the others.
Oh, well, the aircraft carrier is amazing just because of everything that's on and how huge it is. Huge, enormous. And that's wonderful. Well, overall, I really enjoyed the Coast Guard ships on boats. Mm. The Coast Guard boats I was on, too. They were smaller and they had a smaller community. Maybe that's a good one. And then
I'm not surprised. As soon as I asked that question, I said, I'll bet she's going to say Coast Guard cutter. Coasties are just wonderful. We have a ton of them here in Connecticut because the Coast Guard is right across the river.
Oh, you're so close.
It's the journey.
You're right. It is a wonderful community. And it's wonderful that Navy chaplains get to sort of participate in that world sometimes.
It is. Well, I hope you get a turn at that. So
that would be fun.
Rachel, that would be awesome. Yeah.
Am I allowed to say coastie now or am I not?
What's your favorite Navy or coastie jargon?
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite?
Oh, boy.
Most of it can't be said on KFUL.
I know that Rachel would never love something that couldn't be said on KFUL.
Just kidding. Well, you know, early on, and I want to hear Teresa's answer on this, but early on in my husband's Navy career, I heard all these little like slang words floating around, and I went up and looked up a list of Navy slang.
Mm-hmm.
And about an hour and a half later, I came away from the screen with my jaw down around my navel going, I had no idea. You all are terrible. So that's a loaded question you ask. Uh-huh. But now that you've asked it, I would love to hear the answer.
Oh, some bad ones. Yeah, I mean, not so kind ones, not ones you can put on, family radio. But I can't even think of anything right now that would stand out.
When you're on the spot, like, I know absolutely no slang. None.
Right.
The one I think is most evocative, I won't share on air. So,
okay.
Ask me privately.
No. Well, no, you'll just let people look them up themselves. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, don't. Just don't.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll stick with coasties. That's my new favorite piece of jargon.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's fun.
Well, and all the ones we use all the time, you know, we're going to the head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to the head. That's a normal thing in our household. Yeah. And I don't know if people in the military use ETA. We always use ETA. What's your ETA?
Well, and you and I confirmed we confirmed the time as 1400i.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Or a lot of times I'll just write when someone texting, I'll write GTG.
Okay.
Good to go.
Good to go.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to go.
You can always tell a military person because they sign all their emails VR, which is very respectfully.
Right.
Right. Yes. Not just respectfully, very respectfully. Mm. Mm. But you're right. The head thing, you guys know what it means to hit the head, right?
Go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the worst sign in the world is this head secured. You know what secured means?
No.
No.
Locked. Unavailable. Close.
Yes.
See, my grandparents were in the military, and so I grew up in a household where that was the jargon we used.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
My family has zero military connection. None. I don't know how it's. It's rare. I get that it's rare, but somehow my family has not. My sister almost, she in an act of defiance and rebellion was going to join the Navy. And we're like, this seems like a bad fit. And she realized it was indeed a bad idea. She wanted to rebel and joining the Navy was not the way to defy all authority.
Yeah, no.
That was the closest we came.
If your sister is anything like you, I'm not sure the military would be a good fit because you speak your mind and that doesn't always play well.
Yeah. Yeah. But I love hearing the stories. And I do have connections via friends.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So what's next for you?
That's nice.
Yeah.
You said you guys have two more years. You're shopping for RVs and looking at a well-earned retirement, unless the Navy comes up with something else even better to do.
Or unless there's something else out there, like, who knows, teaching, advising, a board. There's other options I know that might pop up for Greg. So if that does, it'll be good. We aren't really landed. Then you can just move there in our RV and be a man.
That's true.
We're ready. We'll be ready.
Yeah. Well, I know that whatever you do, you'll be serving the Lord and taking care of each other and using your gifts, which for both of you are substantial.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so that's exciting to think about. And we'll be following your story to see what happens in the future. Because I know it's still going on, this story. You started it, you paused it, you continued it, but you have not finished it.
Yeah.
That's so true, Rachel. Thank you. Thank you.
Teresa, it's been really, really fun. This hour went so fast. I can't believe it's already been an hour. So it's been so fun to have you on and to hear your story and all your insights. So thank you so much for joining us today.
To be here.
Ladies, if you want to join the conversation about being a chaplain's wife, if your husband is considering being a chaplain, you can join our conversation in the Lutheran Ladies Lounge Facebook group and also on our Instagram page. We'll have a conversation, I'm sure, around this episode when it posts on both of those places. You can join us both of those places. You can find all of our episodes at kfuo.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You've been listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at kfuo.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us, too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast is underwritten in part by Lutheran Heritage Foundation. LHF translates, publishes, distributes, and introduces books that are Bible-based, Christ-centered, and Reformation-driven. Learn more about their global ministry and how to support their projects at lhfmissions.org.